Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the live internet broadcast of Secrets Revealed, Understand the Book of Revelation from Start to Finish. It is Sunday, 12 p.m. Texas time, 1 p.m. Eastern time, Sunday, March 12, 2023, and we are talking about Revelation chapters 11 and 12 today. The 1,260 days prophecy is the focus of our talk and discussion today. I want to invite you to participate with comments, your perspective, and your prayer requests. You can reach us during the live internet broadcast at 1-319-527-6027. If you'd like to share your perspective on anything in the Book of Revelation, please call during the live internet broadcast. Our PGM phone number is 1-319-527-6027. When you call, you have to press 1. If you don't press 1, then you show up as a listener, and in that case, I would not open your line because I believe that you are calling as a way to listen and connect to the broadcast. But if you press 1, then that raises your virtual hand in our internet-based queue. And when I see it, I will unmute you to invite you to share with us and with me. So again, I invite you to participate in the live internet broadcast on Sundays at 12 p.m. Texas time and on Thursdays at 9 a.m. Texas time. That's 9 a.m. Central time, 10 a.m. Eastern time. And you can do that by calling our PGN phone number during the live internet broadcast. You can also text. Our PGN text number is 1-214-505-8719. That's 1-214-505-8719. That's the PGN text number. It is not specific to this particular PGN show, so make sure when you text, you say, this text is for the Book of Revelation Research Scientist or for Nicole, so that Prophet Randy Chandler will know that you are specifically texting in so that he will share that with me. So let's get started. 1,260 days, what is it? Well, to begin with, it is one of 12 statements of prophecy in the Book of Revelation. Chapter 12 in its entirety is one documentary about those events leading up to the second coming of Jesus Christ. So there are 12 statements of prophecy, 12 prophecies in the Book of Revelation. Let's talk about chapters 11 and chapter 12. So the longest statement of prophecy is the seven trumpets prophecy. Yesterday I was watching part of a YouTube video, and there's a person on there saying, Trump is a trumpet, and he went on and on in this way, and I'm not sure exactly what he meant. I didn't get a chance to see that particular video in its entirety, but in the Book of Revelation, it's a seven trumpets prophecy. It begins with verse 2 of chapter 8, and it ends with the end of chapter 11. Let's go to chapter 11. Our focus is 1,260 days today. So what does the Book of Revelation say about that? In verse 3 of chapter 11, in the seven trumpets prophecy, it says, and I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will be clothed in burlap and will prophesy during those 1,260 days. So we have in the seven trumpets prophecy a reference to 1,260 days. And in this verse, we're told that Jesus Christ is going to give power to the two witnesses who will prophesy during, quote, those 1,260 days. So earlier in chapter 11, it says, go and measure the temple of God and the altar. Let's pause there. What temple? God's temple. Well, where is it? It's not there yet, but it's coming. It is coming. It is the temple where the daily sacrifices will be resumed. The daily sacrifices referred to in the book of Daniel. In the book of Daniel, when it says that the Antichrist will stop the daily sacrifices. Well, before we get to the daily sacrifices, which the Antichrist will stop, we have to get to the third temple. The first temple was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. The second temple rebuilt in the same area on Mount Moriah in Jerusalem. That same land that was purchased as recorded in the Bible, the second temple was rebuilt, and it was destroyed in 70 AD. And here we are, nearly 2,000 years later. It's 2023. And what are we talking about? We're talking about the third temple. And there's been preparation with those priests who will be in charge of conducting the daily sacrifices. Those priests have been trained. They have been assembled. The architectural plans, the blueprints for the third temple have been created. The furniture, very specific details about what should be in the temple and where. Those items have been purchased for use in the third temple. And importantly, the red heifer, which is required for the special ritual, the special ceremony that will perform, the 10th red heifer, it is available. Now, there are 5 red heifers that were flown to Israel. That's been discussed. Very exciting, very exciting. One of the members of the family who was a part of that process was a guest here on PGN. Prophet Randy Chandler had him on, the brother of the person who raised the red heifer, the person who connected, sort of facilitated that process. If you didn't hear that show, I encourage you to listen to the archive. So what are we talking about? The 1,260 days refers to a time coming up in the very near future where the temple of God will be rebuilt. It will be here after the signing of the confirmation of the covenant that will give the green light for the Jewish people in Israel to rebuild their temple on Mount Moriah, the same place where Abraham was told to make his sacrifice, the same location where God told Solomon to build the first temple, the same location where the second temple was built, the same location where the third temple here described in Revelation chapter 11 will be built. Now, what about these 1,260 days? So we know that this refers to a period often referred to as the third temple era, the period during which in the nation of Israel, a physical temple, a temple of God, where daily sacrifices will be performed, will exist. And it says further in chapter 11, they will trample the holy city for 42 months. 42 months, that's the same thing as 42 30-day periods. 42 times 30 is 1,260 days. So during this 1,260 days, we're told in Revelation chapter 11, in the seven trumpets prophecy, that one of the key things that will happen is that the two witnesses of God will prophesy. So they will prophesy during the Great Tribulation, which is the 1,260-day period. At the end of this period, the two prophets will be called up to heaven. Let's hear it. When they complete their testimony, the beast that comes out of the bottomless pit will declare war against them, and he will conquer them and kill them. Now, when do they complete their testimony? They complete their testimony at the end of the 1,260 days. Let's go back. It says, and I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will be clothed in burlap and will prophesy during those 1,260 days. So they must necessarily be present on this physical earth if they are prophesying during those 1,260 days. Later, we're told that they are, that when they complete their testimony, they are killed. And then it says, and their bodies will lie in the street, in the main street of Jerusalem, the city that is figuratively called Sodom, and Egypt, the city where their Lord was crucified. And for 3.5 days, all peoples, tribes, languages, and nations will stare at their bodies. No one will be allowed to bury them. Then when we get to verse 11 of chapter 11, it says, but after 3.5 days, God breathed life into them, and they stood up. Terror struck all who were staring at them. Then a loud voice from heaven called to the two prophets, come up here. And they rose to heaven in a cloud as their enemies watched. Now, this is very interesting. Their enemies watched. If you were a believer, a truth seeker, a sheep among the good fish, among the wheat, and you saw two prophets of God ascending, would that be sufficiently compelling to get your attention? Would you be interested in watching two men of God ascending into the clouds to meet God in heaven? I think you would be. I certainly would be, and I believe you would be too. So if their enemies watch, and there's no mention watching, what does it all mean? What does it all mean? Now let's continue. We're talking about the 1,260 days. There's lots of timing to discuss in the book of Revelation, but today the Lord's put it on my heart to focus on the reality of the Great Tribulation and to use Bible scripture to illuminate exactly the length of time of the Great Tribulation. So there are two wraths, within us. There's the wrath of Satan and the wrath of God. The wrath of Satan is 1,260 days. It is followed by the seven final plagues, which culminate with the Battle of Armageddon. The wrath of Satan focuses on a war on Israel, followed by a war on the saints. The war on Israel will continue for the entire 1,260 days. The war on the saints begins after a humiliation suffered by Satan, as Satan is waging a war through the Antichrist and the false prophet, his appointed leaders during the 1,260 days, when he suffers the humiliation of failing to destroy Israel with a flood, in his anger, he decides to take it up a notch, to move beyond a war on Israel, to expand his war to a war on the saints. Now, when does this all happen? It happens during the 1,260 days described in several places in the book of Revelation. Let's go now to the 1,260 days prophecy. So we were in the seven trumpets prophecy, Revelation chapters 8, 9, 10, and 11. Now in chapter 12, all of chapter 12 is a singular documentary. It's a singular documentary in words. It's one of 12 visions, 12 moving pictures that John the Revelator was shown when he was called up to heaven and shown by the angel. Moving pictures, which he referred to as visions. Today we call moving pictures movies. And we call those movies that reflect real life events documentaries. So often you'll hear me refer to the statements of prophecy in the book of Revelation as documentaries. Why? An omniscient God, an all-knowing God, created, curated moving pictures for an angel to show John the Revelator. Now, these aren't created movies. These aren't fictionalized reports. Now, there's nothing wrong with a movie that's fiction, right? For example, I recently saw Creed 3, a fantastic movie. I really enjoyed that. Lots of great movies that are pure fiction. But the book of Revelation is pure fact. We're told in Revelation 22 that every statement of prophecy is authentic and genuine and sure to come to pass. So when we look at, when we hear this 1,260 days prophecy, we're hearing what has happened in the future. So God has been to the future, created a vision for John the Revelator to view in the past so that he could record it in a book that we would read in our present. God is big that way. God is big that way. He can be in the past, the present, and the future all at the same time. And so our big God is revealing big secrets to you and me today. Let's hear them. What are the secrets about the Great Tribulation? Verse 1 of chapter 12 begins this way. I witnessed in heaven an event of great significance. I saw a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon beneath her feet, and a crown of 12 stars on her head. She was pregnant, and she cried out because of her labor pains and the agony of giving birth. Then I witnessed in heaven another significant event. I saw a large red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, with 7 crowns on his heads. His tail swept away 1/3 of the stars in the sky, and he threw them to the earth. He stood in front of the woman as she was about to give birth, ready to devour her baby as soon as it was born. She gave birth to a son who was to rule all nations with an iron rod. And her child was snatched away from the dragon and was caught up to God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness where God had prepared a place to care for her for 1,260 days. That is the abstract, the movie trailer. So an abstract is simply a movie trailer in words for the 1,260 days prophecy. It ends with this cliffhanger. God had prepared a place to care for the woman, the nation of Israel, for 1,260 days. Now, why would God need to communicate to you and to me that he had prepared a place to care for Israel for 1,260 days. During the Great Tribulation, a 10-nation alliance will dominate the political and economic affairs of the world. It will not be as great as mighty Babylon. It will not be ancient Babylon. Okay, so at that time, during the time of Daniel the prophet, Babylon was a major, major country. There was essentially a one world government. Nations existed, but they reported to Babylon. Babylon had gold. You might recall Nebuchadnezzar's dream where he dreamed of the giant statue, and the angel Gabriel told Daniel that this was all about the nations that would exist from that point in time to the end of the age. Until the end of time. What does that mean? At the end, in Isaiah chapter 6, verse 9, it says, "And of the increase of his government and his peace, there shall be no end." Well, what does it mean when it says his government? The government of Jesus Christ. So politics is man's attempt to govern itself. But we cannot govern ourselves. We require a holy God. And indeed, Jesus Christ, God manifest in the flesh, is coming to establish his government. So have you ever longed for peace? Have you ever wondered when would there be peace on this earth? That time is coming, and it's coming with the return of Jesus Christ when he fights and wins the battle of Armageddon. Now let's hear about the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, so we can talk about this 10-nation alliance, this powerful beast that will dominate economic and political affairs during the time of the Great Tribulation. So in Daniel chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar is frustrated. He wants to find out what the dream means that he has had. And it says at the beginning of Daniel chapter 2, in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams by which his spirit was troubled and agitated, and his sleep went from him. Then the king commanded to call the magicians, the enchanters or soothsayers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans, diviners, to tell the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said to them, "I had a dream, and my spirit is troubled to know the dream." Then said the Chaldeans, diviners, to the king in Aramaic, the Syrian language, "O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation." The king answered the Chaldeans, "The thing is gone from me." So long story short, he couldn't remember his dream. And he told them, "I need you to tell me the dream that I can't remember, but it's bothering me. And then after you tell me the dream that I dream, then you need to interpret it for me." And so, of course, these individuals were following a false god. The spirit of God was not with them. They had no ability to hear from God. Now, certainly God could choose in his power and wisdom to caused them to hear from him, but they did not have the spirit of God within them. They were worshiping false gods. And so they said, this can't be done. So let's fast forward. Ultimately, Daniel is found, and he says, "I will tell the king. I don't know his dream, but I know a God who knows it. And God will show it to me and will interpret it for the king." And so let's get to the part where Daniel is telling Nebuchadnezzar what he dreamed. "As for you, O king, as you were lying upon your bed, thoughts came into your mind about what should come to pass hereafter." Okay, so we're in verse 29 of chapter 2. And why are we looking at this? We're in the hereafter. We are in the part of Nebuchadnezzar's dream more than 2,500 years ago now. We are in the part of Nebuchadnezzar's dream where a stone comes out of seemingly nowhere. So let's hear about this. As for you, O king, as you were lying upon your bed, thoughts came into your mind about what should come to pass hereafter. And he who reveals secrets was making known to you what shall come to pass. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than anyone else living. But in order that the interpretation may be made known to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your heart and mind, you, O king, saw and behold, there was a great image. So God has given Daniel the dream that Nebuchadnezzar dreamed. Isn't that incredible? Only God can do that. Only God can give you a dream that somebody else dreamed so that you can reveal the glory of God, the omniscience of God, the power of God. So Daniel says to King Nebuchadnezzar, who's struggling, who he can't sleep, he had this bad dream, but he can't remember the dream. He says to him, you, O king, saw and behold, there was a great image. This image, which was mighty and of exceedingly great brightness, stood before you, and the appearance of it was frightening and terrible. As for this image, its head was of fine gold, its breast and its arms of silver, its belly and its thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay, the baked clay of the potter. As you looked, a stone was cut out without human hands, which smote the image on its feet of iron and baked clay of the potter and broke them to pieces. Then the iron, the baked clay of the potter, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were broken and crushed together and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them could be found. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain or rock and filled the whole earth. This was the dream, and we will tell the interpretation of it to the king. Okay, so we have heard Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and we care about this in our discussion of the 1,260 days prophecy because we are at the part of the iron mingled with clay. We are in the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, the dream that God gave him. This is a God dream. So let's hear the interpretation because very shortly that stone is coming. The stone is coming. So let us hear the interpretation. This was the dream, and we will tell the interpretation of it to the king. You, O king, are king of the earthly kings to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, the might, and the glory. So this is revealing that on the earth, at that time, Nebuchadnezzar was the king of kings. So there were other nations with presidents and prime ministers and rulers, whatever terms they gave to reflect emperors, whatever terms, words they gave to reflect their kings. But Nebuchadnezzar, at that time, it says, you, O king, are king of the earthly kings. Okay. And wherever the children of men dwell, and the beasts of the field, and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand and has made you to rule over them. So this is confirming that God has given you this authority, Nebuchadnezzar. Because of God, you're allowed to be the king of kings on this earth at this time. Then it says, you, king of Babylon, are the head of gold. And after you shall arise another kingdom, the Medo-Persian, inferior to you, and still a third kingdom of bronze, Greece, under Alexander the Great, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom, Rome, shall be strong as iron, since iron breaks to pieces and subdues all things. And like iron which crushes, it shall break and crush all these. And as you saw the feet and toes, partly of baked clay of the potter and partly of iron, it shall be a divided kingdom. But there shall be in it some of the firmness and strength of iron, just as you saw the iron mixed with miry earth and clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of baked clay of the potter, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly brittle and broken. And as you saw the iron mixed with miry and earth and clay, so they shall mingle themselves in the seed of men, in marriage bonds, but they will not hold together. For two such elements or ideologies can never harmonize, even as iron does not mingle itself with clay. Here it is, friend. And in the days of these final 10 kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, nor shall its sovereignty be left to another people, but it shall break and crush and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Just as you saw the stone, just as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter. The dream is certain, and the interpretation of it is sure. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and paid homage to Daniel. Now let's pause there. It says the dream is certain and the interpretation of it is sure. There's lots to unpack with that dream, but our focus is the 1,260 days. Now it says right here, and in the days of these final 10 kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Now, when are the days of the final 10 kings? During the 1,260 days, truth seeker. Now, what's going to happen when these 10 kings are here? These 10 kings will be the leaders, the presidents, the prime ministers of 10 nations. These 10 nations will exist in Europe. These 10 nations will form an alliance that represents the iron mingled with clay. So we're told in Daniel chapter 2 about the 10 kings, and then we're told about the 10 kings again in Daniel chapter 7. Verse 20 says, and about the 10 horns representing kings that were on its head. So they're talking about the beast. So the 10 nation alliance in the book of Revelation is referred to as a beast, and the Antichrist as its mouthpiece is also referred to as a beast. And finally, the false prophet is also referred to as a beast. All working in service to Satan. Now let's talk about this 10 nation alliance. This will be present. This will dominate world affairs during the 1,260 days. Recall from the 666 Antichrist prophecy, it says, and the beast was given the power of speech, uttering boastful and blasphemous words, and he was given freedom to exert his authority and to exercise his will during 42 months. Now, what is 42 months? Let's make sure we have this math right. 42 months is 260 days. 42 months is 1,260 days. So you might say, well, Nicole, I've arrived at a different number. The Bible tells us repeatedly over and over again in the book of Revelation, in the book of Daniel, and elsewhere, that there is a specific period of time that is 42 months That's 1,260 days. Now, we could talk about the different calendars, and certainly, you know, we use one calendar in the Western world, and in some places they use another calendar, but we're going with the Bible to understand the timeline at this end of the age. So what have we established? 1,260 days is the wrath of Satan. It's the Great Tribulation. Revelation 13, verse 5 establishes that this is the period of time where the Antichrist will have dominion over the earth. Revelation 11 tells us that this is the time when the two witnesses will prophesy. Revelation 12, this is where we are now. Revelation 12 tells us that this is the time where God has prepared a place to care for Israel. Now, we've heard the movie trailer for the 1,260-day prophecy. We have context about things that are happening outside or beyond specifically the nation of Israel. What else is happening? We've heard a little bit about that. But let us focus now, because God has chosen to create an entire documentary about specifically what is happening to Israel during the 1,260 days. If God says it's important, I believe that God is smarter than me. I believe that he's smarter than you. If he says it's important, let us hear this important information that he wants us to know. The 1,260-day prophecy, the full movie begins with verse 7 of chapter 12, and it ends with verse 18. It starts this way. Then there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon and his angels. Let's pause there. So how does this prophecy start, the full report, right? So we've gone from the movie trailer to the whole movie. It begins with, there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon and his angels. So the archangel Michael does not live on this earth, and he does not live in Hades. He lives in heaven. Where he lives, in his role as a key angel for Israel, gauges in battle. Now, let's really think about this. It says that there was war in heaven. If there's war in heaven, heaven is not a place of perfect peace. Now, don't be mad at me when I'm preaching it. Have you ever heard Kenneth Hagin say that? So I'm saying that, and I mean it. Don't be mad at me when I read the Bible, okay? So you might say, well, wait a minute. Heaven is perfect. God's in heaven. It has to be perfect. Well, if it's perfect, why does it say right here in verse 7, then there was war in heaven? Friend, let me tell you about Revelation chapters 21 and 22. God reveals in the culminating chapter of the culminating book of the Bible that he's creating at the end of the age a new earth and a new heaven. Well, why would we need a new heaven? If there was war in heaven, it's not perfect. It's been defiled. Now, that's my opinion. That's my opinion about why God would create or have the need to create a new heaven. That might not be the reason at all. But the reality is, in our future, there will be a war in heaven. Now let's hear what happens. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon and his angels. Now you say, well, wait a minute. It says fought, past tense. Remember, John the Revelator is telling us in words what he saw in these moving pictures. So he's saying what happened in the moving picture. It's a moving picture, a documentary of the future. Now let's continue. And the dragon lost the battle and he and his angels were forced out of heaven. Now, you might recall from the book of Job and elsewhere in the Bible that Satan is referred to as the accuser of the brethren. So if Satan's the accuser of the brethren, how does that work? In Job, we're told that Satan goes before God to report on what God's people, his sons and daughters, have done, as if to taunt God, to communicate, you say these are your people, you say that they serve you, you say that they love you, but look, Job has done this. Look, Nicole has done this. Look, Lewis has done that. He's the accuser of the brethren. How would you feel if somebody came to you and wanted to talk to you night and day about the wrong actions, the wrong deeds of your son or your daughter or your wife or husband or boyfriend or girlfriend or niece or nephew? It might get on your nerves. It might bother you for someone to suggest that someone who loves you, maybe that person really doesn't love you. Maybe that person is doing things behind your back that and they think you're not watching, or that you don't know, you're not aware of it. They say they're in agreement with you and that they follow your rules, but they're acting here in a way that shows a failure to agree. In the case of Job, he says, you think Job loves you, but he's only giving you these sacrifices and praising your name because you've given him everything. He didn't have all these things, he would curse you in a minute. So he's sitting there, he's lying, he's making accusations, he's reporting on real events. So ultimately, we're told, the dragon lost the battle, and he and his angels were forced out of heaven. Now, I gave you that background because you're about to hear some interesting things. So if you live in heaven, and I believe that you have loved ones you've met and loved ones you haven't met, you may have a great-great-great-great-grandfather who's in heaven right now, part of the cloud of witnesses praying for you, thinking about you, looking forward to meeting you and being with you on this new on the new earth to come, and on this present earth for the millennial reign. So if you're in heaven, maybe you're tired of Satan and his flunkies just walking around doing whatever they want, talking to God and just making these accusations constantly coming as if they're having court to accuse your brothers and sisters who are on the present earth of this or that thing. Maybe some of the things are true, but certainly some of them are not true because we know Satan's a liar. You might get tired of that. And we're going to hear in a moment that people in heaven are tired of it. And the dragon lost the battle, and he and his angels were forced out of heaven. This great dragon, the ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, the one deceiving the whole world, was thrown down to the earth with all his angels. Okay, so Satan and his flunkies are thrown down to the earth. All of the angels who lacked wisdom, all the angels who believed the lies of Satan, his flunkies, are thrown down to the earth with him. Now, what happens? What's the reaction in heaven? So you've been in heaven, let's say you're David or Prophet Daniel. You've been in heaven a long time. You've been in heaven since, at a minimum, since Jesus Christ was there and people could go with him. So that's thousands of years. So Satan's been getting on your nerves for 1,000 years. So let's hear the response of our friends, families, loved ones in heaven. What is their response going to be when Michael is finally given the authorization to take these losers out? Take Satan out and his flunkies. Throw them out of heaven. We're not tolerating them anymore. Finally, God gives Michael the authorization. You say, well, how do you know that? It's not written here, but we pray, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. thy will be done. So when it's the will of God for Satan to be thrown out of heaven, what happens? Then that's when he's thrown out, and not until then. All right, let's continue. Verse 10 says, then I heard a loud voice shouting across the heavens, it has come at last, salvation and power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ. For the accuser of our brothers and sisters, that's you and me, has been thrown down to earth, the one who accuses them before our God day and night. And they have defeated him by the blood of the Lamb and by their testimony. And they did not love their lives so much that they were afraid to die. Therefore, rejoice, O heavens, and you who live in the heavens, rejoice. Okay, let's pause there. So what has happened? After Satan and his flunkies are thrown out of heaven, they are evicted permanently. Permanently evicted from heaven. Now, that's bad when you're evicted. I think we all know that. No one wants to be evicted. They're evicted from heaven. They can be on the earth for a time, but they're evicted from heaven. The response of those in heaven is celebration. It's joy. It's happiness. They are excited, and they are praising God, and they start with, it has come at last. I feel tempted to sing that that song. You know, the lady has a song, At Last, but I won't sing it. So they say, it has come at last. So they are thrilled by these events. So is heaven a place of perfect peace? No, it isn't. How do we know that? There will be a war in heaven. And finally, not after a decade, you know, we get frustrated. We're in the middle, there's been war in this place or that country or that place for 10 years or 30 years or 40 years. Imagine you're putting up with Satan for not 10 years, 40 years, 50 or 100 years, but 2,000 years. You might be tired. So they're rejoicing. They're rejoicing. Now, what does it mean for us here on the earth, though? What does it mean when Satan is evicted from heaven? So as you may know, angels can be present in heaven and they can be present on the earth. It appears that they can travel between the two locations. So since Satan is a fallen angel as well as his flunkies, perhaps they are able to travel between locations at will. I don't know exactly how that all works. But we do know at this time they will no longer be able to be permitted in heaven. They are confined, constrained to the earth. And that's an eviction. They've been demoted. They've been demoted. If you're not permitted to be in heaven and you're an angel, you've been demoted. Now let's continue. What does it mean for us here on earth? It says, but terror will come on earth and the sea. For the devil has come down to you in great anger, knowing that he has little time. Now what happens? So Satan and his flunkies, a third of the angels, the fallen angels, are evicted from heaven, and now they're here with us on the earth. It says in verse 13, when the dragon realized that he had been thrown down to earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to the male child. So if you're mad at God, but you can't get at him anymore, if you're mad at God, but you can no longer go to where he dwells, you can no longer go before him in the throne room in heaven to be the accuser of you and I. It says that he was the accuser of our brothers and sisters. You can't get at him anymore. He says, be gone. And he allows Michael to fight against you. And, of course, he prevails. So Michael's one angel. Satan is a fallen angel. Satan has a third of the angels, but Michael has two-thirds. You see how it ended. You see how it will end. Now, let's continue. You can't get at God. Satan cannot get at God. So instead, he pursues pursues the woman who had given birth to the male child. Instead, he pursues the woman who had given birth to God manifest in the flesh, Jesus Christ. Instead, he pursued Israel, who had given birth to the Lamb of God. Now, when does he pursue Israel? What is this whole documentary about? He pursues Israel during the 1,260 days. Now, certainly, Israel has been pursued from the beginning, but she is pursued with a persistence, with a passion, with a focus like there has never been. This statement of prophecy, this documentary began with the beginning of the pursuit of Israel, but now it ends with what? It ends with a 260-day pursuit of Israel by Satan on this present earth during the time of the third temple era, which is here. The temple is shortly to be rebuilt. As soon as the green light of the confirmation of the covenant happens, they will begin assembling the temple on Mount Moriah in Israel. And in fact, it is after the temple has been rebuilt that the 1,260 days will occur. Now let's continue. When the dragon realized that he had been thrown down to the earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to the male child. But she was given two wings like those of a great eagle, so she could fly to the place prepared for her in the wilderness. Let's pause right there. In the book of Daniel and in the book of Revelation, symbols are used to symbols, animals. The emblem of a nation . An animal associated with that nation is used repeatedly by God to communicate the identity of those nations. He did it in the visions given to Nebuchadnezzar during the time of ancient Babylon, as reported in the book of Daniel. And he did it again during more than 600 years later, during the time of John the Revelator, when he reveals some of the nations in the 10-nation alliance in the 666 Antichrist prophecy in Revelation chapter 13. But right now we're talking about the wings of the eagle. The wings of the eagle. Now let's go to Daniel chapter 7, verse 4. Often in the book of Revelation, a key to unlock a secret in the book of Revelation is provided in another book of prophecy. So in this book, the book of Daniel, one of the books of the five major prophets, there are many secrets to unlock those in the book of Revelation. Daniel chapter 7, verse 4 says, "The first, the Babylonian Empire under Nebuchadnezzar, was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I looked till the wings of it were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon 2 feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it." Now, when you think about the United States, so we could do a whole discussion and lesson on this. I would refer you to the work of Irvin Baxter. He has a number of really great teachings on this, on these nations. We're focused today on the 1,260 days prophecy, so I'm just going to touch briefly on this. But for a full discussion of these nations and the evidence, I really encourage you to take a look at Irvin Baxter's teachings on this. He does a fantastic job with it. Let's continue here. It says, "I looked till the wings of it were plucked." The wings of what? The wings of the lion. Now, Nebuchadnezzar had two dreams, and we're talking here about a vision that Daniel had during the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. And in Daniel's vision, he was shown the 10-nation alliance that will exist during the time of the 1,260 days. And he was shown a lion, the same lion referred to in the 666 Antichrist prophecy in Revelation 13. Now, we're told only here in Daniel are we told about where do these eagle's wings come from. So we need this secret to unlock the eagle noted in Revelation chapter 12. The secret is that the eagle was plucked from the lion. Now, the lion, if you look in the dictionary, lion, the lion is the symbol of Great Britain. Now, some people might say, well, I think what happened is they have a certain order of how they look at this, and I want to share with you how I look at it. Now, how is it that more than 600 years before the book of Revelation was written, that Daniel had a vision that matches the moving pictures John the Revelator was shown in heaven? When I examine this, I believe that an omniscient God has already been to the future, as I shared earlier, and he shared information about the future in the past so that we could hear it and know it and prepare in the present. So I don't believe that these nations acted in a way to align themselves with the symbols in the Bible. Instead, God knew what symbols would be associated with these nations. God knew that Russia would be associated with the bear, that Time magazine would repeatedly put pictures about major stories with Russia using a bear because that would be the symbol associated with Russia. That the Leopard, the number one tank in the Western world, the Leopard, which has been manufactured by Germany for decades, they're on a new iterations of it. The Leopard that the Ukrainian people say that they need, the tank they say that they need to defeat Vladimir Putin, the Lord knew that the Leopard would be associated with Germany at the end of the age. The Lord knew that the United States would put the eagle on its money and that the eagle would be the symbol for the United States. And indeed, Great Britain ultimately had the eagle's wings plucked for it. The people of the United States of America said, we're not sending you our money. The queen will not be the queen of us. We will have our own government. We're going to be on our own nation. Yes. We come from you, but now we stand on our own. So, yes, the roots of the United States of America are in Great Britain, in mighty England. Now, let's continue. We went to Daniel chapter 7, verse 4, to unlock a secret in Revelation chapter 12, the secret of the eagle. Now, why do we need to know who the eagle is? It says, talking about Israel, but she was given two wings like those of a great eagle so she could fly to the place prepared for her in the wilderness. That 1,260 days is going to be a time of wilderness, a time of great distress like the world has never seen and like it will never, ever see again. It says, men's hearts will fail them in the Bible during the time of the great tribulation. Going to be very, very difficult. But it is a finite period of time. And for those who know the prophecies of the Bible, we needn't be afraid. We know how it ends. She was given two wings like those of a great eagle so she could fly to the place prepared for her in the wilderness. Let me share briefly. So this 10-nation alliance will be able to thrive due to the United Nations, the revamped version of the League of Nations, which came and went, which failed, but the United Nations hasn't failed. So the United Nations is an attempt to prepare for the New World Order, to usher it in, to transition to a world government. recall that there are five nations that have veto power in the United Nations. So people are angry about this, right? They say, well, if all the nations are united, if the UN passes a resolution about what should happen on this earth, that is what ought to happen because we're United Nations. So every nation who's a member of the United Nations should have an equal voice. Well, that sounds about right, but that's not how it happened. Those nations that were victorious following World War II had more power than the others. Why? Because they could not get the United States of America to join the United Nations without giving us more power than the others. And then when the U.S. said, no, we've got to have some special power, we call that veto power, so the U.N. can pass a resolution and we can say, stop right there. We're going to veto that. That's going to be a no. And we've done it over and over again. For what purpose? To care for Israel. This is a Judeo-Christian nation, the United States of America, and we have a special relationship with Israel. It's not going to end. Ultimately, whoever the president of the United States is, during the time of the Great Tribulation, it will be a president. It will be a president that facilitates the caring of Israel. We say, well, how do you know that? It says right here, in Revelation chapter 12, she was given two wings like those of a great eagle. And all of the beasts identified in the book of Revelation as nations that will exist during the time of the Antichrist are identified in Daniel's vision in Daniel chapter 7. Let's talk a little bit about the 10-Nation Alliance and its connection to the UN. Five nations have veto power: the United States of America, China, Russia, Great Britain, France. Now, veto power is very important. If you follow politics, you know that this is a big issue right now. It has been for a while. People are angry that the United States has veto power. They're angry that China and Russia have veto power. They say, well, how are we really a United Nations if we pass a resolution, but we can't get at Israel? I'm going to pause there. What is the take-home point for us? During the time of the 1,260 days prophecy, the United States of America will provide, through the grace of God, by assignment from God, care to protect Israel from the dragon for 1,260 days. So it says, there she would be cared for and protected from the dragon for a time, times, and half a time. Now let's go to verses 15, 16, 17, and 18. Then the dragon tried to drown the woman with the flood of water that flowed from his mouth. So Satan will cause a mighty flood in an attempt to take out Israel. So this will no doubt be a flood. The meteorologists will likely say, oh, this looks bad. This looks really bad. No one can survive this. So this is through Satan. He's using water in an attempt to take out Israel. Let's hear what happens. In verse 16, it says, but the earth helped her. Helped who? The woman. Who's the woman? Israel. By opening its mouth and swallowing the river that gushed out from the mouth of the dragon. Now, this is simple physics, right? There's water that has a certain volume. The earth opens up so that the volume of the water that would have been on the surface is now in the ground. So the water has been displaced. Satan has suffered a defeat yet again. Satan is defeated. Satan is defeated. people get so scared sometimes when they think about the book of Revelation and they think about the great tribulation. We ought not to be afraid. Satan will be defeated over and over again. During the 1,260 days, here's one of his defeats. He'll be defeated again when he gets into hand-to-hand combat with Michael at the beginning of the millennial reign. He'll be thrown into the bottomless pit, and then he'll be defeated a final time at the end of the millennial reign when he is thrown into the lake of fire that burns with sulfur and brimstone forever and ever. That's the second death. He's defeated. We have no reason to fear Satan. He is a defeated enemy. Now let's hear about this defeat he suffers here. It says, and the dragon was angry at the woman. Now why was he angry? He was angry because he's defeated. He's humiliated. He thought he was going to be able to hurt the woman, Israel, that he was getting somewhere, but he's got nowhere. And the dragon was angry at the woman and declared war against the rest of her children. Now, we see a pattern. Satan's angry at God, but he can't get at God anymore, so now he goes after Israel. He goes after Israel, but he can't take Israel out in the way that he fantasizes about, the way that he tries to. So now he says, get at you, Israel. I'm going to go against your children. You see the pattern. He's defeated. Now, who are the rest of Israel's children? Now, this is very important. I shared at the beginning of our time today that during the 1,260 days, it begins with a war on Israel. And at a certain point, we're at that point, at a certain point, upon the defeat of Satan, his defeat when he is not able to use the power of the elements to take out Israel physically. When he's defeated in that way, his humiliation, his anger is so great that he says, I have to take it up another notch. And instead of there being simply a war on Israel, now there's going to be a war on Israel and the church. I say, well, how do you know that? Here it is. And the dragon was angry at the woman and declared war against the rest of her children, all who keep God's commandments and maintain their testimony for Jesus. So remember, the children of the promise are the olive tree. And the believers, those who are Gentiles, I should say, because you can be a part of the original olive tree and be a believer, but those who are the Gentiles who are believers, we're the wild olive tree. But here it says specifically, the rest of her children, all who keep God's commandments and maintain their testimony for Jesus, this is specifically the church, Christians everywhere, the war on those who maintain their testimony for Jesus will begin at a specific point in time during the 1,260 days prophecy. That point in time is revealed in the 1,260 days prophecy. It is after the failure of the flood to take out Israel. Now, I can't tell you when during the 1,260 days. Is that day 30 of it? Is that day 52? Is that day 98? I don't know. It doesn't tell us that. But in the very next prophecy, God goes on to reveal secrets about the war on God's holy people, the saints, the church, in the 666 Antichrist prophecy. So that suggests to me that it happens earlier rather than later than the 1,260 days, but I can't say for sure. But we do have an indicator of when that war will start. So when the war on Israel happens, after the Antichrist stands in the rebuilt third temple, every Christian who knows the prophecy of the Bible should be preparing at that point. Really, people should be preparing before then, but certainly at that point. But the war will not happen immediately. There'll be some period of time And you say, well, how will we know when it happens? When there's this prediction that a great flood is coming to Israel, oh, no, there's no way that Israel can survive the elements. This flood is going to be bigger than anything we've ever seen. Unfortunately, people need to evacuate. The meteorologist will likely be saying things like that. But it's not going to happen. And, of course, as you know, when hurricanes and floods happen, there's some number of people who just refuse to leave, one because they're defiant, and then others, they don't have the financial resources and the wherewithal to do it. Okay. So, friend, what does this mean for you and me? It means that we understand that Daniel's 70th week is a seven-year period. So there's a prophecy about Daniel's 70th week. And because of that, a week in Bible terminology is 7 years. There's a discussion often about 7 years, 7 years, the Great Tribulation, 7 years, 7 years. Let's clarify. 7 years refers to Daniel's 70th week. It begins with the confirmation of the covenant. The Great Tribulation is within that seven-year period, but it is not 7 years. The Great Tribulation is 3.5 years. How do we know that? We know that from the seven trumpets prophecy in Revelation chapter 11. The two witnesses will prophesy for 1,260 days. We know that from Revelation 13, the 666 Antichrist prophecy, and he will be given dominion and power for 42 months. That's 1,260 days. And finally, we know it from Revelation chapter 12, from the 1,260 days prophecy, where it's revealed that the war on Israel lasts for precisely, exactly, specifically 1,260 days. So I'm excited for us to get into these numbers, numbers in the book of Revelation, numbers in the Bible, numbers in Daniel. We are talking about the book of Revelation and its secrets. We are using other scripture in the Bible to unlock as many secrets as we can. So I invite you to be with me and to be with us again this Thursday at 9 a.m. Central Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I'll be live on this PGN network, Prophetic Grace Network, doing an internet broadcast talking about the book of Revelation. Will you join me if that's your drive time? Maybe you're driving to work on Thursdays. Would you consider putting PGN on your schedule on Thursday mornings? You're driving into work, 9 a.m. Texas time. Maybe you're in another location. Whatever you're doing, please consider making this a part of your connecting to what God is doing and what God is saying. So we are always reading from the book of Revelation, being focused on what God is sharing. Now, I want to end with praying a special prayer for every truth seeker out there. So you might say, well, I'm not a Christian. I really don't want you to pray over me. Listen, if you are a truth seeker, and I believe that you are, the kind of people that will listen to this program and be a part of it are people who want to know the truth, people who say, I have to know what is true. I cannot be in deception. I want to know what is true. If you're a truth seeker, I believe that you will arrive at being a believer. Why? Jesus Christ is the truth. He is the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me, the Bible says. So you get to right standing with God through Jesus. That's how that happens. Now, what's this special prayer I want to pray over you? Do you know that God, nowhere else is this said in the Bible. There are 66 books in the Bible, 27 in the New Testament, 39 in the Old Testament. Do you know that out of 66 books, only one has a place where it says that the people who read this have a special blessing? Let me share with you what it says. It says in Revelation chapter 1, verse 3, blessed, happy to be envied are those who hear it read and who keep themselves true to the things which are written in it, heeding them and laying them to heart, for the time for them to be fulfilled is near. Well, those who hear what read? Let's back up. Blessed, happy to be envied is the man who reads aloud in the assemblies the word of this prophecy, and blessed, happy to be envied are those who hear it read. So where are you in this? You are blessed, you are happy, you are to be envied because you have heard the word of the prophecy of the book of Revelation, and I declare and decree according to the word of God that as you keep yourself true to the things which are written in it, heeding them and laying them to your heart, because the time for them to be fulfilled is near, that you will continue to be blessed, you will continue to be happy, and you will be envied because the truth will be in you and with you. May God bless you. I want to invite you, according to Jeremiah 33:3, call out to God, and he promises to show you great and mighty secrets that you do not know.